0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Just want to, before we go forward, to go back to yesterday's programme to thank again profusely the people on air, and indeed so many people off air, who helped us put the As Live programme together from August 22nd, 1922. Tim Crowley of the Michael Collins Centre in Clonakilty. If you haven't visited, it's a must-see. It's a must-see. Well, there's some fantastic pieces in and around the town of Clonakilty, but Tim Crowley, as you heard yesterday, is an expert on every detail of the last days and indeed the life of Michael Collins. Deirdre Bourke, who you also heard from, the house where the spot indeed where the she explained how a young lad was standing outside the pub nonchalantly, as they do, with his cap on, but he was actually a scout, and he was keeping Ello, as they say, he was keeping lookout for Niall Murray's house, and Niall was on the other line, because in Niall Murray's house up the road behind Long's pub, he was Dinny the Dane Long. In Niall Murray's house, as he explained, a big house. He gave great description of what was going on at the house on that date 100 years ago. This is where the ambush was effectively being planned. This is where they were having their weekly meeting of the anti-treaty forces. And Dev was there, and various. There was a lot of people in the house, but as he explained, it was a big house. And in one sense, it was a normal weekly meeting until Dinny the Dane Long ran in and said, Michael Collins has just gone past, heading towards Bandon and Clon. And that's when they decided to form an ambush. So his fate was set many hours before it actually happened. And then we had Helen Collins, a relative of Michael Collins, with Michael O'Mahony, big, powerful voice, and all the connections. Mary Clare, Collins Powell, Victor Edmondson, his grandfather, was with Collins in the convoy. I think that's the first time he spoke. And his grandfather, 3 months later, was in the firing squad that executed Erskine Childers, that executed in Beggars Bush Barracks here in Dublin. So thank you all. And that programme is available to listen. If you are going to listen to it, hopefully, please try. I can't oblige anyone, but please try and listen to it from beginning to end, because it is a chronological As Live event. We did it in Easter Monday 1916. We decided to have another go. Obviously, we're limited with COVID restrictions still here, so we were in studio. But we will do other historic events as they come up. Caroline Donoghue, if the history of this past few years is to be written, it would, of course, be about COVID. It would be about the pandemic, but it would also be about the housing crisis. Caroline, good afternoon.
Hello, how's it going?
And Caroline, the clock is ticking for you and your family. What's the challenge?
The challenge is I'm here in this house 12 years, and I have 4 dependent children. The eldest lad is special needs, and the youngest lad is ADHD. I got notice in January that the landlord had to sell, and I'm looking since January for accommodation. And it's just pure madness. Like, I've got 2 viewings on 2 houses since January, you know.
Okay.
The landlord was up to the 30. I had to be out on the 31st of
Caroline, July. I'm going to hold you there for a second. Try and get a better line, because such an important. We'll try and hold on there, and we'll ring you back on another line. In the meantime, I want to. I got Father Pat O'Toole from Ballintubber, who's just been visiting the home of that family. You heard it there, the last item on with Brian. The family, they run a small shop near in Ash Park near Ballintubber, County Roscommon. And the early hours of yesterday morning, a gang broke into the house. The house is attached to the mini market, and they basically held the 90-year-old woman and her 2 sons, held one of them in a separate room. Father Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You've just left the family home.
Well, a little while ago, okay. Yeah, about an hour ago.
Okay,
yeah.
And how are they?
Well, you know, they're remarkably calm, and good, and we had a cup of tea together and we prayed together.
Okay.
And I just wanted to reassure them of our love and concern for them, and on behalf of the parish. I'm one of the two priests here.
Okay.
And the Mrs. The mother, who is 94, one of the days now.
Wow, good God.
She amazed me. She was so calm and very precise and everything, you know. And they went through a traumatic experience, really. Of course, it doesn't mean it has disappeared completely out of their system.
Yeah.
But they appreciate it. The care and concern and prayers, most of all.
And have they been listening to the radio, Father? But would they be aware of how big a national story and the horror that swept the country? It was said a woman in her 90s. We now know she's 94. And her two sons, what would be in their 60s? Would they?
Yes, I think so.
That a gang would attack. And they were in the house apparently for nearly an hour.
Yes, I understood it would be about that. That's correct. And the sons had been tied, their legs were tied together somewhere or other, and they would manage to loose. And then they had removed the landline, but they took away their mobile phone, so they had to go up to a neighbour's house.
Good God.
To get a call out.
In the middle of the night.
Oh, yes, when they freed themselves, had to use all their ingenuity and wisdom.
Yeah, and were they held in the same room, Father Pat?
They were held in the mother's bedroom. They were there. They ransacked the house and the shop, I suppose they stole from each of the rooms, stole the items.
God.
I do not know what the description of them were.
And would they have gone into the shop and taken high value items?
Oh,
like
yes,
cigarettes.
Yes, they would, because it's one building, you know.
Yeah,
just,
I see that. Yeah,
it's a country. Yes, they would have stolen the cigarettes, especially, and of course the till, if they had the money there.
Good God.
It was at 1 a.m. They were just. Son was locking up, checking out the locking and put on the alarm when they confronted by one of them, and then he was threatened by a screwdriver. This man had one of them had a, so they found the best thing was he was threatened to keep quiet or that he would be injured.
Good God, with a screwdriver, a common.
Yeah. But there may be other weapons, for all we know.
And was a doctor called?
Not that I know of.
Okay, they're remarkable people.
Oh, yeah, remarkable. They're people of great faith, and especially the mother is a wonderful woman, and we prayed there together, and she has the house very much under the protection of the good Lord and our Blessed Mother. Yeah.
And has she a special devotion to Our Lady?
She has. And we were talking about Knock, and as I told her how I was there yesterday for the closing of the novena, and I did not hear about it until this morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were over in Knock, because that's the big day, wasn't it, yesterday?
Yesterday.
Thousands upon thousands.
The previous Sunday, yesterday was the Monday, not as big a crowd as on the Sunday.
Sunday
was very big.
It's a big time of the year for Knock, I heard.
Yes.
I heard the Monsignor on last week talking about it. Now, Father Pat, when you say you said a few prayers, do you mind me, what would that be, a decade of the rosary or
No, it would be spontaneous prayer.
Excellent.
The Our Father and Hail Mary.
Okay.
Reassuring them that God was with them and with us all the time. And
calming. Prayer can be very calming.
Yes. And they appreciate it.
And one newspaper said there was four men, I think.
Did
they know how many were there?
Yeah, they did say four.
Four?
Yeah.
So they're outnumbered from their ages, but they're outnumbered from the start.
Yes, oh yeah, well they weren't able to put up any resistance, so it was this element of surprise, I suppose, coming in. They entered by a gate into the rear of the house, the shop, and then pushed in the back door. Or forced it in.
And what, did some, one fella came from the front and one came from the back? Is that
no,
the way
they
operate?
No, I think they all entered by... Okay. They all came by the back.
And who spotted the screwdriver, or were they told?
Oh, no, I think the man who was locking up the son, John, I suppose... It was... a reminder to him that they were meant business.
Yeah. And but did he have one car or two cars?
Does he know? No, that's bad. I don't know, Joe. I didn't get any description.
Okay. And did they, okay, well, the Gardaí, it's a big investigation because of...
Are
the Gardaí still at the house?
No, there was no one there today.
Their mobile phones were stolen.
But they got them again. Someone phoned and they were able to locate them on the grounds. They had thrown them away.
You see, these if it's one of these, we don't know who it is, but it's one of these professional burglary gangs who use screwdrivers. In fact, they boast about the fact that they use screwdrivers and Stanley knives, didn't they? There was a funeral last year in Dublin, I'm sure you were aware of it, where three men who were being chased by Gardaí, Graeme Taylor, Carl Freeman and Dean Maguire, unfortunately, wouldn't wish it on anybody. They were involved in a head-on collision with the three of them were killed. But on the altar, in the church, were floral arrangements of screwdrivers.
Right.
On the altar of the church were floral arrangements of Stanley knives.
Yeah.
And spoken from the pulpit to the objection, by the way, and I think a bit of the fear as well of the priest, spoken about in heroic terms, and the phrase was on a montage. You know this story. Give me the money. Get on the ground. Just horrific stuff.
Yeah,
horrific stuff.
Yeah, and then it spreads fear, especially those who are living alone, and we have a lot of elderly people, scattered throughout the parish. And
have they ever been in this type of robbery? Every shop is. So for some shoplifting, I know, but have they ever been...
Mrs. Tone made that 25 years ago or more, her husband was alive then. I do not know, it was the shop there, it probably was, but they had, there was a robbery of the shop as such.
Okay.
But I don't know what, it didn't go into details.
Yeah, but would it have been the same as this? This is the way these, if it's the same people, they attack at night, they use screwdrivers, and use high powered cars. Where's the nearest motorway to Ballintubber?
The motorway would be, I suppose you go to Castlereagh.
Back on it there, yeah.
Yeah, they are going to Roscommon, then.
The Sligo.
Yeah, you go to Roscommon at Lone, I suppose, to get on. Because it would be on the way to Roscommon,
Yeah, so there would have been there's a few motorways around. They're everywhere now. And how are your parishioners? Are they worried, or are they just deep?
People in shock, saddened, and annoyed, of course, too. I wouldn't have met so many of them, but it's a big topic here now.
Yeah, of course, it's a big topic nationally. A 94-year-old woman, her two 60-year-old plus sons, about their business, providing a service to a local rural community in their little mini market. Selling everything that people need in the area.
Exactly. Yeah.
And hardly making a few bob, I suspect.
Yeah, well,
And they're being attacked in their own home, which is attached to the shop, in the middle of the night by four men. Any idea what ages? Did they say what ages these fellas were?
No.
Were their faces covered?
Yeah, I think so. I understood they were, yes.
Now, I remember that phrase again from the... Because it's such a horrific incident from that funeral of those three men who were self-confessed burglars. They boasted about it from the altar. You know the score. Get on the floor. Don't be funny. Give me the money.
Well.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's very sad.
Now, hopefully, the Gardaí have been on top of this crime now for...
Please God.
Because I presume it's a fairly quiet area, Father Pat.
Oh, yes. Yes, well, and... well loved and great solidarity and cooperation and kindness and they're very generous people and very community conscious it's really neighbourly.
Okay, and they're aware they're aware through you of the support that they're getting.
Oh yes, yeah, they appreciate it very much, and that if we had prayed, I was able to assure them that. We will continue on praying for them and helping them.
Is there daily mass in the area?
Yes. We have the mass this evening now.
I'm sure they will.
Praying for them.
There'll be special intentions, yeah.
Yes.
To Our Lady. Okay. Father Pat, you mind yourself.
Thank you.
Please, I don't know much about this. Well, I know a little bit from way back. But these are opportunists, random, and they're spotting little businesses where they think there's money. They're opportunists. They're not stalking everyone in the area. Just reassure your parishioners that. And the Gardaí are totally on top of this. In fact, I'll give out the number if I have it there. I haven't got it at the minute. The number of Castlereagh Garda Station.
Okay.
094-962-1630. And the Garda confidential line for everybody. Now, please, if you know anything or suspect anything, this has to stop. 1-800-666-111. Is there a neighbourhood watch in the area, Pat, or a WhatsApp group?
I wouldn't have all the details on that now, Joe, but I think so. You see, I'd be less informed on some of these things.
Yeah, of course, Now, I presume, hopefully, the presbytery has never been burgled, has it?
No, thank God. We have our own alarm system, but we need to get, we'll have to get... extra spotlights in outside, you know.
And I'm sure, hopefully, people have CCTV. Though these couriers know when they if they arrive in a spot, that's the first thing they look for is CCTV. Do the family have a dog?
Not that I know of. Okay. Joe, no, I don't think so.
And that's the other thing that frightens the life out of them.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, Father Pat, dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs.
Amazing. Amazing.
Okay. Well, you mind yourself.
Thank you, John.
And I'm sure. Well, from what you say, and it's obvious as well, that that the family got great solace from your visit,
and not only mine. I think others, I'm sure, have been calling in, and she said how much she appreciated the visit. It meant a lot to her. To be able to know you're not alone.
Yeah, and as you said, the family have a special devotion to Our Lady, and the Assumption of Mary just passed on the 15th of August, and we have Our Lady's birthday on the 8th of September.
It happened yesterday. Was on the Queenship of Mary.
How long have you been a priest, Father Pat?
I'm since 1965.
My God, congratulations.
Thank you.
1965.
I was ordained in July 1965.
So you're a priest 57 years.
57 years, yes. In July past. Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Joe.
And where did you study? What seminary?
I'm a Holy Ghost missionary priest, Presbyterian. I was ministering in Kenya.
Of course.
For 30 years.
They did great work there, didn't they?
It was a great blessing.
And how long are you back in Ireland?
I'm back in Ireland now. I'm back 15 years.
And where are you from originally, Father Pat?
From Mayo.
Okay. And have your family still there?
Yes, my older brother is there in the home place.
So you of all people could identify with that family last night and what they've gone through. Are you the longest serving priest in Ireland, Father Pat? At 57 years, and you're still saying daily mass. 57 years of priest.
I'd be retired here. You know, okay. I'd be only helping out.
Well, as you know, Father Pat, a priest never retires. Because you won't be allowed to retire.
People still come to you
for the mass cards, and people still have special affection for special priests, and they believe, for whatever reason, you've a hotline to God, whereas other padres might not. You know the things that, especially with your long years, you've gone from the local telephone exchange to a mobile phone contact with God at this stage. So good health to you, Father Pat.
Thank you, please
pass on our kind regards. And it's irrelevant about me, but to know that the family know the horror that has greeted this awful crime, and that anyone who can do anything will do it, and that our thoughts, and especially given their own faith, our thoughts and our prayers are with the family, and hopefully they'll recover, won't they, Pat? They will.
I will call over there again to this very day to the family and tell them what you said, your message of hope and solidarity.
And just the family are Una, Seamus and John Farrell, I know that.
Because
and the shop is called Farrell's.
It's
a mini market. And have they been living there for long? Have the Farrell's been there for long?
Oh, I think it's a long... I wouldn't know it. I'm on my ninth year here in this parish helping out. But they're well established. Long
time. Okay.
Probably, I wouldn't know the history of the long...
Okay, but you're telling us there, and as good a fettle as could be expected, given the trauma they've gone through. And they're together, and the three of them are together.
Yeah,
and they're very close. And
James was lucky enough; he was home, and he would not be there every night.
But
he was there.
Okay, well, our kind regards to Una, Seamus, and John. And to the people of the area, and to yourself, and the solace that you visited. But I suspect, from what you say, Father Pat, you emerged from that house with a pep in your step to see such faith in people after such an ordeal.
It's definitely they're certainly wonderful people, and they're taking it, you know, as with great courage and.
Hopefully that solidarity will transmit to them. Father Pat O'Toole in Ballintubber, go to Míle Maggart, a Fádig, agus again, kind regards to Una, Seamus and John Farrell.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mine is better now with Caroline. Caroline, you have many weeks before you're going to be evicted from your house in Kells.
Hi, Joe. I've the second week in September now.
Oh,
the landlord was very obliging, and he's after giving me the extra 6 weeks.
And is there what type of house do you need to rent?
I have four dependent children, a four-bedroom, a three-bedroom at this stage. Because of the eldest son and the youngest son, I have to keep the structure there, the eldest son goes to a special needs little day college in Navan, and he knows his bus routine. We've learned him in and all that. And the youngest lad, he's ADHD, and he's going into second year. And we just, I have to keep, it'd be crucial for me to keep him in Kells school.
Yeah.
You know?
And how long have you been looking for a home?
Since January.
Good God.
Since January, Joe, and I've got two viewings. And other than that, it's just fly, belt, look at the house is gone. I do understand Daft is putting up houses, but they're also taking them down as quick because they're getting that much of a response. I have friends, we're ear to the ground, I'm using social media, to try and help me. It's just now at this stage, Joe, it's dynamite because I was meant to be out here on the 21st of July.
Right.
And up to the 30th of July, there was nowhere for me to go. You know, it was only that the landlord was really, really nice, and I'm a very good tip. And he said, look, he says, I don't want to see Carolyn and the kids out in the street. He says, I'll give the extra few weeks, but he says, I do have to sell.
Yeah.
You know, so he was very obliging, you know,
so basically,
full of gratitude for that.
And that says a lot about you and your family as well, Caroline, positively, that the landlord was so obliging. But what you're basically saying, is there anyone who's thinking of putting a house up for rent and hasn't put it up yet, and you've explained the reason in great detail, but why you need to stay in the Kells area because of the two children with special needs and their routine, and which just takes a long time to build out and build up on their welfare. In terms of, see, this, the first thing, if anyone rings in, say, well, how much is available from my, if you do you want to say how much is available to pay for rent each month?
I'll get help with the HAP.
Okay, of course, yeah.
So I think that goes, I think my the highest I can go is 1600.
Okay.
Well, you know.
And how are you coping?
Mentally, Joe, I suffer with my own mental health, you know.
Yeah.
But it's mentally draining, because as a mother you sort of feel like a failure, because you actually have nowhere for the first time in your life to, you know, put the children. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's heartbreaking, because you just honestly don't know where you're going to end up.
Yeah.
You know, I've no control in any of this. It's a real case of now, potluck, if someone rings in and said, listen, I have this accommodation, I'll go for it. You know? It is mentally draining. It is. This is the first time in my life now this has brought me to my knees, because I am pleading and begging, and I'm even gone to the stage now, if someone's doing a house up, I'm going to them and saying, are you actually doing that up for yourself, or are you going to be putting that on the rental part, you know?
That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so anyone, you know, around, like I've gone to Oldcastle, I've gone to Minolty, I've gone all around the areas.
Well, give me name a few of the places that you visited, just so we might spark some idea. Did you say Minolty.
Oldcastle, Kells, there was the Slane Road, Ballyvore, you know, there's a few off areas there, and I have my name down in a state agent since January as well, but they're not coming through, or else there will be a priority that they have a list there of people that they have to sort out first. You know?
Yeah.
I have my name down in a good few places, but it's just so hard, Joe, because there's no comeback on that, you know? And I'm going to be in the same boat now in the second week in January, where literally I have nowhere else to go.
Have you been in this situation before, Caroline?
No, never. Never. I've to maintain a roof over the head, you know.
Okay, stay with us. I've Berun Abdullah. Berun has contacted us as well. What's your situation, Berun?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. My situation, basically, Joe, I'm searching for a house in Carlo, as I have been offered a course to do my bachelor's degree in law.
Okay.
And I have a young family. I have two small children. My youngest 8 months old, and then my daughter is, she's 2.5.
Okay.
So we currently live in Mycollin in County Galway. I've been looking for a house since the beginning of July, last 2 months, and I haven't had a single viewing. Like nothing really.
God, yeah.
And I need two bedroom or three bedroom house in Carlo or the surrounding areas, so I can start my education in September in about 2 weeks time. But the problem is the house I'm currently living in, my tenancy agreement will end in literally a week time.
Eight, yeah.
Yeah, and I had hope that I will be able to secure a house in Carlo. So 2 months ago, I gave my notice to my landlord and I told him that I will be leaving.
Yeah.
But now I have not secured the house and I must leave this house in a week time and I have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So this is like, in a short version, this is my situation. So that's why I contacted you in hope that to ask everyone that who can hear us to reach out or maybe to help us or to guide me or help me in any way to find an accommodation for my family.
Yeah.
So I can actually focus and concentrate on my studies.
And Caroline, and I'm sorry I have to ask these questions, but it saves might spark some inquiries from landlords. Caroline has 1,600 a month available. Barun, do you know how much you would have available per month for rent?
Like Caroline, I'm also on HAP the last 8 or 9 months. So I need to find a house that accepts HAP, and I can top up the rest myself. So more or less, in my case, around 1,200, 1,300, that's if I push it.
Okay.
I cannot afford more than that.
Yeah, I understand, and I'm so sorry to have to ask these questions, but it's given that you're contacting us for help, that's the first thing we'll be asked, so it might help narrow it down. And you're going to do a law course. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What are your ambitions? Who would you like to work with when you qualify?
I initially came to Ireland as a refugee, and I went through a long process of being asylum and was in a hostel for 5 years and all that. So I'm hoping to through my education and to be a lawyer or a solicitor and work in the area of refugees and people that need help. And the way the world is going, people will always need help. And because I have the life experience in it, and I also have my diploma in legal studies, so I'm hoping to be a solicitor in the future.
And where are you from originally, Barun?
I'm Kurdish. I'm Kurdish from northern Iraq, Kurdistan.
So you're a Kurdish refugee.
Initially, yeah, but I have my status. I have been.
Of course, I know this.
I currently have dual citizenship. Like,
but you fled the country.
Correct.
You
yes,
had to
I
leave.
Did.
That's the right man. Sorry.
Yes. Yes.
And is your family still there?
My father was unfortunately was died in a war when I was 6 years old, and just my mom there and some other family members. Not a lot. I have my wife and my two children with me in Ireland. So.
And where is your father? He died, didn't he?
I lost my dad in a war on 15th of April 1988. Was the last time he was seen. He was in the Kurdish army fighting against the former Iraqi regime of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And the last time he was seen, he was injured in a war. But and then he's missing till now. So that's how many years is that? 1988.
So you've never heard or got his remains back, or
no, never. Not even a grave of him that I can go to.
Oh my God.
Nothing.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to hear that. And you said you were 5 years in direct provision. Is that right? Here.
Yeah, from December 2005 till actually end of November 2010.
And what was that like?
It was very difficult because our rights were very limited.
Yeah.
I had no right to work. I had no right to education. We were like four, five, or even sometimes six of us in a room. We were on €19.10 per week, and it was very hard, and the process was very slow. Like
how would you pass your day?
To be honest, I used to go for a run every morning for about 5K a run.
Good man.
And reading and trying to talk to the Irish people. Talk to them to improve my language. Well, to learn my English, because I had very basic English back then. And I made a few friends, and people were nice and friendly to me. They didn't care if I made a mistake or not, so they continued talking to me. So I managed to improve my English, and now okay. here I am. Only a few months ago, I got an offer through my CAO application to do my bachelor's degree in law.
Brilliant.
In 15, 16 years later.
But I'm thinking, Barun, if I can ask, the mental pressure of being in direct provision.
Yes.
Must be incredible. The stress, the anxiety.
A complete nightmare, Joe, to be honest. It's very difficult. You know, there is something need to be done to the system, or it can be handled better in a different way, you know? It's just, it's very slow for some reason. I don't know why. But I'm hoping in the future I will understand this better after finishing my degree and understand how the law works better, you know. And, but I think there is definitely a space to be improved, you know.
And I know you've trained your skills as a barber.
I did, as I mentioned, you know, we were on a very. Very little money, like 19 euro, 10 cents.
Yeah.
It wasn't a haircut back then. Cost 10 euro.
That's right.
And
I
had a few had scissors and machine and all that. So
great,
I offered everyone in the hostel a free haircut. You know, and just I just learned from there and improved it, and after I left the hostel, I started working as a barber, and I worked for like 9-10 years.
Oh,
but then after COVID came, and then I lost my job, and injured my back and all that, and so that's why I'm now back to education as a mature student, hoping that I can improve my skills there, and then start working in that doesn't involve me using my back so much.
And
if you know what I mean.
I understand. And Barun, do you have to pay? You have to pay third level fees, don't you?
I have applied for back to education.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that I will get it. But first, I must be registered with the college and provide letters from my university that saying that I'm actually attending the classes.
Okay,
then
of course.
I have to show this. Yeah, I have to send these letters. Then they probably will start accepting my my claim.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm told that did I read somewhere that in one of your content emails to us that your mother sold. How did you get into the country? How did you get out of Iraq?
Illegally.
Okay.
If you know what I mean, it's
well, the only way you could.
The situation wasn't great. I was about 21, 22 years old. I was young, and my mom had some belonging, and it wasn't much, but. We managed to, through some contact, find this smuggler, and she said, look, if you can just get him out of this country and somewhere safe,
okay.
I will agree to help to sell all this and give the money to you.
My
But it was, how many years ago now? It was maybe 17 years ago. It was back in 2005, yeah.
So your mother sold bits and pieces to try and pay to get you smuggled out. That's what she.
Some other belongings. Yeah, she did.
Yeah,
she
no
to,
choice. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, she's happy. Look, she says, while I was working after I got out of the hostel and I started working, I started to pay some money back. She said, look, I don't care. Money is nothing to me. At the end of the day, you are safe. I know you're in a safe country where there is no Irishman walking down the street with a machine gun, you know?
Yeah,
and it's a safe country. Like, in comparison to Iraq, Ireland is very, very safe.
Okay.
So she is very happy now. You know, that doesn't even matter for her that she has to sell those things, even though that it was a... She inherited it from her own mother, like from my grandmother.
Yes, yes. Okay, stay with us, Barun. Stay with us. Caroline is still there, also looking for accommodation. And I have more people on the line after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And our WhatsApp number, by the way, because people are sending us voice messages on WhatsApp about the housing situation, 087 1843 709. 087 1843 709. This is one we just got from Sean.
I came up to Dublin 5 years ago. I've been working 60 hours a week. non-stop for those 5 years. I cannot afford to take any holiday pay, to take time off. I need the holiday pay. I make approximately 150 to 200 euros profit per month. I'm currently paying 47% of my income in rent in Dublin just for the privilege of having a job. I haven't managed to save any money of any significance, and my accommodation will be ending shortly, and the next accommodation available is available 2,000 a month. I am going to be forced to leave Dublin, leave my job and go back on welfare just to end up not homeless. This is the reality in today's Dublin and indeed today's Ireland. This government seems to have financialised rent, financialised housing and turned people into mules and cows to be milked for money.
Sean, that WhatsApp voice message number is 0871843709. Ellen Breslin is listening to Caroline and Baroon. Ellen, what did you spot in Athlone that's relevant to this? Go ahead, Caroline. Ellen, sorry, Ellen Breslin.
Yeah.
Sorry, I misread your name. Go ahead, Ellen. What did you spot in Athlone?
There's a house here beside us.
Okay.
In our little park, in the area where we live. It's only a small park.
All right.
And there's a house in there. The lady had died in April.
Okay.
And the house was just let go. The weeds grown up so high. And now they have blocked it up with dirty, filthy bars, whatever. And we're living right in a car park. People coming from the bus station, the train station, we're right in the heart of the town.
Okay.
And it's an eyesore to come into the park and see that, what they've done.
And do you know who owns the house at the moment?
The council.
Oh, the council own it?
Yeah.
And why do they board it up when we're hearing from left, right and centre people need accommodation
today? They're too busy looking around to see who they'll give it to, which of their friends they'll give it to.
No, you can't say that, Ella.
Yeah.
There is a housing list.
There is a housing list, Joe, but they're not taking people off the housing list. We know it in Athlone.
And who put up the hoarding?
The council.
And did anyone say to the council, do you know when you're going to be able to rent it out?
They've no idea when they're going to. It'll be boarded up now for about 6 months.
Is there anyone working on it now?
No. They came in when we complained about it, I think it was on Friday.
Yeah.
And they cut the grass and they cut the weeds. But it's still blocked up.
That was very good of them.
Yeah.
But there's still no one in it.
No, and there won't be. There won't be anybody in it.
And why do you say that with such conviction, Ellen? Has it happened before?
It has happened. It's happening all the time. I mean, there is housing estates here that are blocked up.
Housing estates?
Yeah. So if people would go around and check and count how many houses is blocked up by the council.
Yeah.
You see, they just close them up and then they just leave it. And then they'll take people from good houses and put them into houses and give them houses. There's a new housing estate built here in Athlone a couple of months ago. People are in it now, but they took people from good houses. They weren't homeless. They were living in good houses, and they took them from there and put them into new houses.
Okay, well, Westmead...
Westmead is a disaster.
Well, this is their statement. In the case of number one, John Paul Park, Athlone, the unit became available to the local authority in mid-April 2022, this year. The property was assessed and a schedule of works was issued to the council contractors in mid-May. Works on the unit commenced in mid-July. They're working on it.
They're not working on it, Joe.
It is anticipated that the unit... Wait for this, Ellen. Are you sitting down?
I am.
Okay, have you a cup of tea nearby?
No, well, you're going I don't to need a cup of tea.
You're going to need a strong cup of tea. They say it is anticipated that the unit will be ready for renting, for re-letting, within the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Well, Joe,
that's good news, isn't it?
That's good news if it happens, but I can't see it happen.
Okay, well then...
Because there is nobody... The only person that was working on it was the gardener. They got him down, I think it was Friday or Saturday morning.
You're right, I saw the photograph. It looks awful. You can't live in a garden.
No.
And houses, by the way, this is from the Westmeath County Council, houses are boarded up for safety and security reasons.
Well, Joe.
So what date is it today? It's the 23rd.
The 23rd of August.
So they're saying by the 23rd of September, it should be ready for re-letting.
Joe, at the latest, at the latest.
They say it could be ready in 3 weeks, which would bring us to the 13th of September.
No.
What do you think? Ellen, will you keep an eye on it for us?
I'll keep an eye on it, like I'm living right
because
beside it.
Because you are right, because in his famous speech that Uachtaráin na hÉireann, Michael D. Higgins made about housing.
Yeah.
The part of the speech that didn't get much coverage, you know, he said it was a national disaster. But he also, later on in the speech, mentioned local authorities. And he said local authorities have to, and I'm paraphrasing, they've got to get the finger out. They've got to recognise this as a crisis.
And the Minister for Housing, he should investigate every local council.
I'm sure.
Local authority.
Well, people as vigilant as you will always help. So, Ellen, keep it. They're saying it will be ready for re-letting within the next 3 to 4 weeks. Not months, not years. 3 to 4 weeks from today's date. And today's date is 23rd of August. Are you doing anything on the 23rd of September? You're not going away or anything in the meantime?
No.
Okay, we'll check in with you then.
Yeah, but I can't see it.
Okay, well then.
It's a surprise to me if they do, because they have other houses locked up longer than
that one. Well then,
that's blocked up now.
Well, thanks for raising and highlighting the issue. Thanks indeed, Ellen Breslin, Caroline Donoghue and Behrún Abdullah. We'll keep the message goes out there. House in Carlow, this is just one example. House in Kells, House in Carlow, you heard the two very different situations, but both equally compelling. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Back to that savage burglary of the Farrell mini market there in Ash Park in near Ballintubber, and Una Seamus and John Farrell. You heard from Father Pat O'Toole that they're doing well. They're a very strong family, very united family. Four men burst in, screwdrivers, and ransacked every single room in the house, robbed something from every single room in the house, and then robbed the valuable goods. You know what the valuable goods are in mini markets. They're cigarettes, cigars, and the likes of blades, and that high-end blades are very valuable as well. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were listening to Father Pat, and it brought back, unfortunately, memories for you and your own troubles.
It certainly did, yes. Yep. In 2013, my wife had a similar experience at home, unfortunately.
And tell us what happened.
Well, Joe, two men broke into the house, pushed her as she came back from the hairdresser. Actually, were waiting for her, and they pushed her into the hall as she answered the door, and bound and gagged her, completely terrorized her. They put handcuffs on her and wrapped around a sink in our downstairs toilet.
Yeah.
It was a very small, tiny room, and they went through the house looking for a safe, so on and so forth, which wasn't there. They stole her jewelry. Joe, the trauma that she suffered as a result of that, she was 2.5 hours tied up in the room.
God.
And very luckily, some people came to the door and she screamed and was able to get free. They called a neighbour and got her free. Had that not happened, Joe, most likely it's possible she could have died. She never recovered from it, Joe, even to this day. This was 2013. And, for at least 18 months after it, I actually couldn't walk into my door. I couldn't walk into my home. I had to ring my wife to say I was at the door and I was going in. She was so
that
terrified,
was you,
strangers, and so on and so forth. And my point is, Joe, that, you know, I know the police just cannot get to grips with these situations. But my view on this is, is in other countries, in other European countries and the UK, CCTV does most of the policing in relation to situations like this.
Yeah.
And we don't have it in this country. We're short staff of police as it is, but the CCTV, you know, at junctions, going onto motorways and coming off main arteries and so on and so forth, you know, covers a multitude and can follow these people everywhere they go, and that's what they do in other countries.
Well, there's more CCTV now than before, isn't there?
There is, but it still doesn't cover.
Were the culprits ever caught in your wife's, in your family's case?
The culprits were, the guards were aware of who the culprits were. They had DNA evidence in relation to the items taken from the house that was caught at their house when they raided the house. And the DPP would not prosecute on the basis that there wasn't sufficient evidence. Now, my view on that is that nobody can refute DNA evidence.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a prosecutable case. I asked two ministers of justice to prosecute, and neither one of them would do so. So
well, it's up to the DPP. John, your wife, as you explained, the anxiety she suffered, did she get any help? Was she offered any help?
Not that police liaison, officer, and you know, they keep around the clock surveillance on the house, more policing on the house. That was about it. You know, she's had a lot of medical assistance, obviously, which we had to pay for.
Yeah,
but
of course,
and that's it, since it's happened, but you know, it leaves people in such a distressed state for a long period of time, and people don't understand the cost of that. The material things are not important, you know. Nobody's attached that much to material things. You know, we can live without those, but you know, our health is our best asset. And you know, when your health is impacted in these situations, you know, that's the biggest loss, I think, for people.
And how is your wife today, John?
Well, thank God, Joe, she's a lot better. You know, to be honest with you, you know, she still never had a full recovery. You know, she still gets frightened at certain movements and so on and so forth. And she certainly doesn't like anybody around her space.
And how is she in the house? Is she still...
Well, we've moved house since, and you know, we've made our house, our new house, a fortress, a complete fortress.
Did you move house because of the trauma?
Well, it was part and parcel of it, but it took us some time to be able to afford to do what we needed to do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
we did, of course. Yeah. I mean, we're both in our 70s now, and you know, we both wouldn't want that to.
Did the Gardaí say it was a random attack or your wife was targeted?
No. Unfortunately, it was associated with my business. They had obviously at some stage followed me home, and they had obviously been watching my wife for some time, thinking that they were going to get an awful lot.
A safe or whatever, which is not unlike what happened to Farrell's. They run a little mini market in a very isolated area.
Anybody in business is a target for these people, you know. And that's the situation today.
Okay, John, kind regards to you and your wife and family. Joe, with Archie.
I hope that the government ministers will be listening in. Maybe something in relation to the CCTV, you know, coverage around Ireland. I'm not saying, you know, I'm based in Dublin, but around Ireland, and one would think that Dublin should be covered, but it's not, you know. And they can't get these people on CCTV, and that's what they need to do.
And then there's this facial recognition thing, but every time an expansion of CCTV is suggested, you get interest groups like the Irish Council for Civil Liberties strenuously objecting.
Anyway,
that's another debate for another day. Good to meet him, I got John, and kind regards above all to your wife, Joe at RT.ie. Now, remember, we're in Dublin, but on this coming Friday, we are in the last Friday of the month. We are in the Fate Leg Hotel in County Waterford, just outside Waterford City there, for Funny Friday. Loads of giveaways, loads of fun, loads of music, loads of comedians, loads of impressionists, and just loads of time for us to relax after a trying month.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
As we heard yesterday, I didn't notice lots of little things I learned yesterday about Michael Collins. He bred Kerry Blue dogs and he loved dogs. Fintan O'Higgins. Fintan, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
What's the dilemma, Fintan?
Well, here's the predicament I find myself in.
Okay.
I have to get to Brussels for the start of the school year next week.
Okay.
And I drove over here at the start of the summer with my little dog and my 9-year-old daughter in our car. And for one reason or another, I have to get rid of the car, but I also have to get the dog back to Belgium.
Okay.
So that's grand. And I had thought that I would just get the car ferry and go as a foot passenger. But I find when I try to book it that I can't go as a foot passenger with the dog. Now, so the reason that I got in touch was I'm not quite desperate, but I'm kind of getting there. And I was hoping that maybe if one of your listeners happened to be getting the ferry from Rosslare to Cherbourg, or otherwise getting to the continent, they might be able to bring my nice, old, friendly, well-behaved, trained dog with them as a kind of a co-passenger.
And what breed is your dog?
Well, it would be an exaggeration to say he's any actual breed, Joe, but he's a kind of the size and shape of a Jack Russell. But the colouring of like a Dachshund and maybe...
And what's the dog's name?
His name is Freddy.
Freddy,
He's 12 years old. I've had him since he was a couple of months old. And he's been all over the place with me in Liverpool and Birmingham and Manchester and Dublin and in Brussels. And he's had a great old holiday. Like, I really wanted to bring him with me because we've a nice little flat. Well, we've a little flat in Brussels, but he doesn't get out much. But when we're here staying with my father, he kind of has the run of the place, and he gets to meet the nephews and nieces, and he runs around and has a great old time.
When are you? Have you got your ferry booked?
No, you see, this is the thing.
Okay.
I probably could have been a bit more foresighted about it, but I didn't realise.
Well, it should be fairly easy to book as a foot passenger. But where
the ferry? Well, it's easy enough to book as a foot passenger, but they won't allow the dog on.
I know that.
Yeah.
But which ferry do you have to be on? Is it Rosslare to where?
Normally, it would be Rosslare to Cherbourg. I did read that there was some new crossing from Rosslare to Dieppe, which would suit us better, but I can't find any trace of that.
There's Dublin to Cherbourg as well, isn't there?
There is Dublin to Cherbourg, but they've never allowed pets on.
Even if you have a car?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And how did you get Freddie over here?
Well, you see, it was grand on the way because we had the car.
Okay, and what carrier were you on?
Stena. I booked it through directferries.com.
Okay, so you're saying if anyone is leaving Ireland for mainland Europe, as we call it, in the next 4 or 5 days, if they have a car, obviously,
if they have a car and if they're booked onto it, and if they would be willing to kind of just allow the dog to be in the car for the duration of,
but is Freddie in the driving seat, so to speak?
Well, no, that would be contrary to insurance regulations, I think, Joe. But he would have to be physically in the car during the crossing.
You wouldn't put him in the trunk.
I think unless it would depend on the kind of car. But no, normally speaking, he might be kind of in the well under the passenger seat or in the back.
But he's not enclosed. Freddie wouldn't be in a little kennel or.
Usually they don't require you to have one of those cages if he's in the car itself.
But aren't you allowed to go down and visit the dog?
Yes, you are. And I think different boats themselves have different regulations and they have different requirements and stuff like that.
But aren't we becoming... Why are ferries so strict? Aren't we becoming much more... especially after COVID, and we're becoming much more accommodating of dogs. I know there's a lot of restaurants and cafes have the water bowl outside. You don't see the big signs up anymore saying, well, I'm sure they're there, no dogs except guide dogs. So people are much more appreciative of their pets.
Yeah, and I think maybe you might be onto something there about that the COVID stuff, because, you know, you really realise if you're relying on the animal for company and the dog then gets used to a certain standard of service maybe. But I don't know why they're strict. I can understand maybe for the longer crossings. I can understand that they probably have to make regulations that apply to large unruly dogs as much as to little small dogs, because they can't be testing every single animal that they book in. I can't complain about that too much, you know. But I do want to emphasise, if anybody might be halfway willing to accommodate old Freddie, that he is a nice, small, well-behaved elderly dog.
Can we do Apocalypse Now, Fintan? What happens if Freddie doesn't like the car or the air freshener in the car and decides to start eating the seats?
He won't do that.
Okay.
He won't do that. I mean, I will offer a personal guarantee that he won't do that. And I would certainly pay for any damage and make it up to anybody in any way possible.
Okay.
You know, I would no problem vouching
for
him.
If you can't get... You've got to be back in Brussels.
Yeah.
If you can't get Freddie on the ferry within the next few days, what's the alternative?
Well, as a last resort, it is possible to fly with the dog, but I'm very reluctant to do that for a few different reasons. He has flown before in the hold, and it's a horrible experience for the animal, and they put you through a very strange kind of vetting process when they accept your dog onto an airline. I was talking to a very nice lady from Air France yesterday, and you have to apply on an animal by animal basis for them to accept it into the cabin, and that takes 24 hours, and it's kind of they have a certain amount of discretion over that.
Fintan, what's Freddie like with other dogs?
He is okay with other dogs.
Okay.
He's not as sociable as he used to be, but he kind of keeps himself to himself. He's certainly not at all aggressive. He did meet another dog there last week that he didn't like, but the other dog, he kind of steers clear of dogs that he doesn't like.
Okay.
He's extremely good with people and children. In fact, I was saying to your searcher earlier on there, Joe, that when I first got him as a puppy from, the charity that I adopted him from, and he had his little dating profile picture up on their website, you know, and it said, this dog is very charming and knows it. And so he has a way of kind of charming and insinuating his way into people's company.
Well,
so friendly and he's well behaved.
Most dogs do know they're charming, and most dogs do know how to charm, especially when they're looking for food. Stay there, Fintan. Alan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
When are you heading to mainland Europe?
Next Tuesday. Next Tuesday at 4 o'clock.
Have you got a car?
Yes. Absolutely. And we're bringing our own dog. The only bugbear. We're bringing a dog as well.
What type of dog is that?
We have a walking cocker spaniel.
Oh, that's a little one. Yeah, it's a little one.
Small to medium, yeah.
And what's your cocker spaniel's name?
Fia.
Fia?
Fia. F-I-A-D-H.
Fia,
yeah.
That's Gaga. And is it male or female?
Female, Joe. Female.
I think Fintan.
Three years old.
Would you take Freddie?
Yeah, we take Freddie, but I think Fintan's in a bit of trouble. You need a pet. I missed a piece of what Fintan was saying, but you need a pet passport.
Yeah, we have that.
He has that.
Need a rabies shot.
Yeah.
But the rabies shot must be given no less than 21 days before the days of travel. In other words, they won't accept a week out. They want a 21 days.
Okay, that's Fintan. Do you have that?
Yeah, he's all up to date in his job.
Okay.
He has his passport and all that kind of stuff. And as a matter of fact, he has a cousin who's a working cocker spaniel that he gets on well with.
Brilliant.
And also, I'm glad you brought up the fact that your dog is female. Freddie is technically male, but he's no danger to anyone in that respect. He's been, you know.
Well, that's interesting, Fintan. The other thing is they don't allow the dogs to stay in the car or in the cabin. Brittany ferries do. I was doing a lot of research. Brittany ferries from Cork to Santander allow you to bring it into the cabin. Irish ferries, they must go into a cage that they provide. I think it's on car deck 5. It used to be on 7 or something like that. But it must go into the cage. It's not allowed to stay in the car to France or in your cabin.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
All right. Well, I mean, so that's a matter of if there's availability then in the kennel, then that might be great, Alan. That's definitely worth my figuring that out.
And did you have to book Fia on, Alan?
Oh, yeah, she has to be booked on, Joe, and I think it was €45 each way. They charge per size of kennel. I think it's 25, okay. 45 and 70 or something like that. So she was about €45 each way. Yeah.
But you're saying you're willing to put Freddie with Fia in the back of the car. You drive onto the ferry. That's the only way Freddie can get on in a car.
Yeah.
And then if Fintan organises for Freddie to get a kennel, hopefully near Fia, because they might get on. Please God, we might get a little ceremony of it later on the year. And you're saying you're willing to...
Absolutely.
That'll be great. Okay, Fintan, there might be a little complication, as you say, about getting the kennel. Where's Shay? Shay Dempsey? Shay, good night. You're listening to Fintan and Freddie and Fia.
How are you, boys?
Hello. What's your situation, Shay?
I don't have a situation. I'm just saying, if he's absolutely stuck and can't get any offer, rather than put the dog in the plane,
okay,
I'll just get a ferry. I'm off from Thursday till Monday, so I'll drive over to Cherbourg and turn around and come straight back just to get him there.
Oh, that's very generous of you.
My God, Shay. And Shay, have you a dog yourself, Shay?
Yeah, I have two Jack Russells.
Okay, and you love them, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Maddie and Juno, if they're listening.
What's their names?
Maddie and Juno,
okay.
What
age are they? Don't say...
They're about three.
Well, they're still very young, yeah. Okay, Shay, there's your name. With your permission, we'll pass on all these names to Fintan. Thanks, Shay. Great.
No,
very,
bother.
Very generous offer.
Yeah,
by the way, have Maddie or Juno ever flown in a plane, Shay? Obviously, you...
No,
you don't.
I won't let them.
You wouldn't let them, okay, because they have to go into hold and all the carry-on. Have you ever brought them abroad?
No.
Okay. Well, you could nearly bring them with you to Cherbourg and let them see Cherbourg and come back. Okay. Thanks, Shay. Claire Timmons. What happened to you? What happened to you on the ferry with the dog?
Well, we weren't actually on the ferry with the dog. Myself and my husband met a young man down in Rosslare about a month ago who was trying to go back to Slovakia with his dog.
Okay.
He was having difficulty, so we brought him down to the terminal, and a very nice young man on Stenaline at the terminal, the Stenaline terminal, organised for him to go, you know, on the ferry with the dog. But on the website it says you can't travel as a foot passenger unless you have unless you have a cage to bring the dog on. But when we went down, we organised with the guy, Reese was his name, the guy working for Stenaline. He booked, Samuel was the man from Slovakia, he booked him on and said he can go on the bus. So there seems to be a bit of, you know, the website says one thing.
Yeah, because as I was saying, our attitudes, the general attitude to dogs has improved. And pets, it was good, but it has improved dramatically post-COVID.
Oh, it has,
because
absolutely,
people realise that they save, dogs save people's lives during COVID.
Yeah, so we got the young man on the ferry. There was just he had to wait 2 days for an availability on the kennels. But I didn't hear the end of the. Is the man going with the dog?
Yeah, he will go. Passenger? Yeah, he's got to get back to Brussels.
Okay, so Stenaline in Rosslare.
Yeah.
Ask for Reese.
Yeah, but Reese might have moved on. Or,
he should get employee of the month, shouldn't he?
There was no problem.
And was this Stena? And are Irish ferries very strict?
I'm not too sure, but Stenaline definitely took.
Well, if they are, they shouldn't be in this day and age. They shouldn't be.
And this young man went to Cherbourg as well. So
well done. Okay.
Okay.
So we're following in a definite lead here. Maura Bennett. Maura, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
What happened?
I just heard there that I missed some of the conversation.
Yeah.
But someone said the Irish attitude to dogs has improved, and
okay,
I think he's off his trolley.
So that's me.
Because
and you're correct on both counts.
No, I'll tell you why. I was in Clondalkin at the weekend.
Go back. I've only a minute left. Tell me about your story, living abroad, your dog. Yes.
I couldn't get my dog on any ferry. I would have tried around March, April. I couldn't get my dog on any ferry from Dublin to France.
Oh, God.
And before COVID, I could put him on Rosslare to Roscoff. Can't do that anymore. None of the Dublin ferries will take the dog.
No, that's not fair.
Yeah. And so in the end, I decided to sell my house in France.
You sold your house?
Yeah, I did. And I'm going back over to do the final signing.
Because of the dog?
Yes. Well, it wasn't the main. Well, it was the one that broke.
Because you couldn't bring your dog back and forward.
Yeah, I was no point leaving him in Ireland.
No,
you know,
no. Yeah.
He's a dog. He's supposed to be part of the family. You know, and here you can't even get into a pub with our outside spaces.
Can you not? No.
No. The one in the middle of Clondalkin has all seats in their car park and would not allow a dog to
fair.
Outside.
That's not fair.
And this, I wouldn't mind, Barbara. My bloody dog was cleaner than some of their customers.
Oh, good luck. Good luck, Mara. Okay, what's your dog's name that made you sell the house?
Ben.
Okay.
You
and love
he's looking him. At me now.
And he loves him. Look at his big soppy eyes. Look at him.
Yeah, exactly. But we really have to change our attitude to dogs.
Here. It's ridiculous. Here. Fintan, we'll free Freddy if it kills us. We'll free Freddy.
Thanks very much,
We'll get Freddy on the...
are so well disposed to an item dog.
We'll get Freddy on the ferry if it kills us. Okay, Fintan, we keep in touch and give you all the information as agreed from our other callers. Shane Galvin's the BCO, Damien Chanel's on sound. Producer Lisa Marie Berry and Catherine Thomas is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.